Great. So I want to share a topic tonight that I don't think any of you were able to hear. If you were present for this, you're welcome to log off and I will not be offended, but I don't see any overlap. I talked about between Mincha and Maariv at the end of Yontif, where there wasn't a lot of people there, about bugs in the sukkah. You see?
Bugs anywhere.
Well, bugs anywhere, yes. So let's give a little bit of background, right? Most people don't like bugs. It happens to be in year 2020, out of all the bad things happening to us, of course, coronavirus is at the forefront of our mind. But also, it kind of went a little bit under the radar for some of us. There was this murder hornet infestation that came from, they come from Japan. That's where they originate from. They think that they... ride on one of the cargo ships, and they landed on the west coast of the United States of America. So, you know, obviously having fires during huge fires in California right now and on the west coast is pretty bad for us. I guess we could hope it's going to burn out the murder hornet population, but chances are we're not going to get that lucky. And that's just the newest of our problems. But in general, on sukkahs especially, we're outdoors in our sukkahs. There are, you know, bees. There are mosquitoes. Now, in Stanford, it happens to be, I don't know, maybe you could tell me otherwise, Marissa and I, we use the shul sukkah because we don't have a personal sukkah. We live in the manor, and it was our luck of the draw that our apartment is on the
bottom floor.
Well, not the bottom floor, because you see, if it was the bottom floor, at least I could, you know, push out onto the grass a little bit. Oh. But we have a middle floor, so we have the deck on top of us also. So we don't have our own sukkah, so we use the shul sukkah, and it was very pleasant. Only once during the day did a bee pass through the sukkah for, you know, like a fraction of a second, and it went straight out. No issues. However, I grew up in Far Rockaway in Queens, which was in Bayswater, which... when you think about the word Bayswater, it's literally right by the bay. It's a 2-minute walk to the bay from my parents' house where I grew up. And unfortunately, my earliest childhood memories of going out to the sukkah is fending off a swarm of mosquitoes during the night and fending off a swarm of bees during the day. Now, it happens to be there is an exemption. There's a dispensation when it comes to sukkah. Anyone know what it's called? Phyllis, you're muted, but it looks like you're trying to say something.
You're uncomfortable if you feel uncomfortable.
Right. So there's something called a patur mitzta'er.
Yeah.
So if I am uncomfortable, then I'm allowed to leave the sukkah. Now, here's the thing. Usually, this is a really odd halacha. Usually when I am uncomfortable performing a mitzvah, what am I supposed to do? Well, the challenge of most mitzvos is there is a certain level of discomfort, but God says that is the challenge. Do something that you're not comfortable with, overcome that discomfort, and serve God by doing that. So it's really odd. You would think when the going gets tough, the tough get going. That's how mitzvos are supposed to work. So why is it when it comes to sukkah, if it becomes too difficult, we're allowed to leave the sukkah? So the halacha,
that's how you found it, or you rang it?
Let me just mute that. Okay, so the halacha is that you're allowed to leave the sukkah because what's a sukkah? Sukkah, we say, teshu ke'ein tuduru. That a sukkah is supposed to be our dwelling place during the 7, or I guess for us in the diaspora, 8 days sort of sukkahs, because you're supposed to sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, which is... not something I was raised to do, but that's clearly what halacha demands. So if I were to leave my house, if a swarm of hornets set up shop inside my house, if it bothered me so much I would leave my apartment any other time of the year, then we don't have a higher standard for the sukkah, which is a temporary dwelling place, than I would for my actual house, for my actual dwelling place. So the same way I could leave my apartment, the same threshold is used for when you're allowed to leave the sukkah, because you treat the sukkah as a dwelling place. Also, this is all by way of introduction, but just important sukkah halachos. There's something called holchei drachim. Let's say you are, you know, you're trapped, you're going on a business trip, you have to go on a cholmoed for some reason, or you are traveling to perform a mitzvah, maybe even a cholmoed trip, arguably. When you're traveling, you can eat mizonos. You can eat a sandwich, and it doesn't have to be in a sukkah. Why? Well, again, if you are when you leave your house, generally, you don't rent. Most people don't rent RVs to go traveling. You get in a car and you have a meal on the go. So the same way, the rest of the year, we are willing to leave our abodes. We will leave our homes and go on a trip for however much time, without our kitchens with us, without our dining rooms with us. So to on sukkahs, it's reasonable that I leave my sukkah for a certain amount of time. I'll be on the road, and I have to eat a meal at some point. So that's called holchei drachim. It's all within that general principle of the sukkah is regarded as our home for lenient purposes also. So whenever a bee entered the sukkah when I was, I'm not even going to say younger, I'm going to say like last year actually. When a bee would enter the sukkah, I went to, before we were here last year, we were at my in-laws. And my in-laws, they don't live in Bayswater, but they live in Plainview on Long Island, which again, you know, it's not as bad as Bayswater, but it's not exactly like Stamford geographically either. So again, one bee came in, and then the bee invited his friends to come in, and then before he knew it, there were at least three or four bees trying to chop some food off of our plates. At that point, I just left the sukkah because...
Hey, aren't you supposed to be happy on sukkahs?
Nah.
Sorry, okay, I'll mute myself. I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
All right, you're doing my job for me. Thank you, Phyllis. So the thing is, though, there are different forms of recourse we have to think about. The way I'm setting up the scenario here is that the bees enter the sukkah. Once there's too many bees, I leave the sukkah, and that's it. But wait a minute. Before having to resort to leaving the sukkah altogether, what other kinds of recourse, what other kinds of options do I have in my arsenal in order to deal with a pesky bug situation before I have to reach that point where I leave the sukkah altogether? Is there perhaps certain actions that I can take in order to protect myself from the bugs that are in the sukkah? What would we say? What are our options?
Pray for bugs?
Antihistamines.
So Susan, antihistamines are once you're stung, right?
You put a bowl out of sugar water.
Let me tell you, I was on allergy medicine. I got stung once, and it was a good thing. I mean, because it didn't get serious. Because I got pretty swollen.
Okay.
You put a bowl out of sugar water. The bees go in there.
Oh, right. So another thing, right? So okay, good. Is that Dina on the phone?
You could sidetrack.
Dina, I think you're cutting out. All right, we'll come back to you. I think you're cutting out for some reason. But anyway, yes, so putting something outside the sukkah is helpful.
Really?
Oh. Something else.
I didn't know bees like honey. That's because
I would think if the honey is, so if the honey's there, the bees are going to come.
Okay, so what some people do, I'm not sure about the
bees. You put a bottle and they fall in.
Right, so for ants, what I see people do is they fill up a pan full of honey, they put it near the sukkah, all the ants march one by one, and then they get stuck in the honey, and that keeps them from invading the sukkah. So right, there's different kinds of weapons in our arsenal here. Another option that we have is something a little bit more straightforward, which is killing a bug. I'm surprised no one just said, why not?
I like that idea.
What was that, Susan?
I like that idea.
No, we don't want to kill bees. Bees are important.
No. Well, maybe not bees, but there, I can think of lots of other bugs I want to kill.
Not all bees.
Yeah, but not bees. You don't kill bees.
The honeybees get special dispensation.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so now Killing is one option. Spraying to repel them is another. But also, trapping. Trapping is another. I guess we won't call it a weapon because you're not using it to kill it, to suffocate it. But you're using it to temporarily keep it
trapped. There are some bugs you really can't trap.
Right.
Yeah, they call them mosquitoes.
If you try trapping a bee and you miss it, it might attack you.
Others.
Mosquitoes are the worst.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. Let me take a moment. I'm going to share the screen with you, and we're going to look at some sources on this.
Rabbi Walk always said he doesn't understand why mosquitoes were created. He can understand every other bug and animal, but not mosquitoes.
Please, I haven't run my list past him.
Mosquitoes is his thing.
All right. Well, maybe they were created just to harass us.
He had a special disdain for mosquitoes.
Yeah. Okay, so let's run through some sources. Again, just quick summary before we run in. Our options are A, killing, B, trapping, C, repellent, that we'll talk about later on. Let's go to the Mishnah that we can find in Maseches Shabbos. If there's anyone here who learns Daf Yomi, chances are you might remember this from a few months ago. Let's zoom in a little bit just so we can see better. Kufin Kara.
But I don't understand exactly what our problem is.
Torah, Batsoa Shal Katan, Bakrif Shal Teshach. So here are a few cases where you're allowed to cover something on Shabbos that you would think you're not allowed to cover. One thing you're allowed to cover is a flame on Shabbos to keep it from burning down a wall, from burning down beams. Now, it's not to cover the flame to the extent that it's going to put out the flame. You're covering it not to deprive it of oxygen, but to create a barrier between the flame and between something that would be consumed by it. Also, Vatsoa Shel Katan, you could cover up the feces of a child. And then, for our purposes, this is the important line, Vakresh Shel Teshach, and also on a scorpion, so it does not bite, so it does not sting you. So already in the Mishnah over here, we have a case that you are allowed to do what? You're allowed to not kill, it says, but you can trap a scorpion in order to prevent it from stinging. So let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, who lays out the different kinds of cases that we could deal with. And we're going to look at soon. You know, can you see if I switch Word documents? Can you see this document here? It looks like a table. Did it switch?
No.
No, it's still on the same source sheet?
No.
Okay, so.
Yeah, Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Brura.
All right, it's going to be hard going between them. Anyway, so Kol Chayav Remeshim Noshkim Amisim Vadai Neherim Vashavas Afil Ein Ratzin Achrav. So if you see a scorpion, you see an anaconda, you see a cobra, snake nearby, it could be, you know, just taking a Shabbos stroll, it could just be minding its own business. You are allowed to preemptively kill that snake. You could preemptively kill that scorpion because it presents a suffix sakana. It presents a doubtful danger, but a possible danger. And therefore, you could strike first before it has a chance to strike you. Ushar mazikin, go nachash v'akrev v'mok she'em amizim. But if we're talking about, minor kinds of snakes or scorpions, that even if they bite you, even if they sting you, they won't kill you. You're not allowed to kill them unless imratzen achrav mutu laharkam. If they're running after you, the Shulchan Aruch says, and they're pursuing you, then you are allowed to kill them. But if A, they're not engaging you, B, they're not even lethal to a human being, then you're not allowed to preemptively kill them. It's only either if they're inherently dangerous or if they are chasing after you.
Rabbi, I'd like to submit something else.
Please, Susan.
If you don't get these bugs, then they proliferate. They're very hardy and fertile. And then you can be overrun and really infested.
Mm-hmm. So I should stress what we're talking about over here.
If it's the sukkah, it's a little bit different, but
Right. So what I want to emphasize is, I think that's a good point, right? If you don't nip it in the bud, it's good. They're going to be fruitful and multiply, right? So this, what we're talking about specifically on Shabbos and Yontif, because on Shabbos and Yontif, it's technically
understood, but
what was that?
Understood, but still.
Right. I mean, look, you know, maybe it differs from situation to situation, but my understanding is, you know, if you bring in the exterminator on Yontif versus waiting one more day, I don't know if that will make all the difference. If it does, then okay, we could talk about that. But my understanding is if you bring in the exterminator 24 hours before or after,
we're not even talking about the exterminator. We're trying to just eliminate these bugs as best you can.
So I think what we're going to be looking at here, it's an interesting point. I think what most halakhic sources address is more of what is immediate concern in front of us. They're not addressing the concern of a future infestation, though I'm glad you brought that up because that's definitely food for thought. Maybe when we're done going through how halakha addresses more immediate bug concerns, you can tell me if you think it has implications for the case that you're describing. Does that sound good?
Okay.
So one other option we have is Vimlav Usar Avamutla Darsan Lafitumo, Bafiva Miskavin, El Shamara Asukilo Ain Mechavin. One other option is that, so let's say it's not inherently dangerous. Let's say it's not chasing after you, but it still presents a nuisance of sorts. So what can you do? You're allowed to basically trample it, but not in a way that it looks like you're doing it to kill it, but you are dorisit lefitumo. So what's lefitumo mean? Has anyone ever heard the term mesiach lefitumo? Does that ring a bell for anyone? So mesiach lefitumo is generally non-Jews cannot be witnesses in Jewish court proceedings. However, if I am walking in the marketplace one day, and I hear two non-Jews talking casually among one another, and they both say something like, this Jewish person died, or they give over something that would be important for a Jewish court to know. Since they were talking among each other casually, that is believable because they're not trying to deceive us then, because they don't even know that we're listening in and eavesdropping. So that's called Mesiach Lefitumo, that they're talking casually. Here, this is Doris Lefitumo, that you're trampling an animal in a casual manner. That's the just the word connection. So if you trample over the ant, whatever bug is there or animal is there, in a way that it doesn't look like you're deliberately trying to kill it or to harm it, but you're just walking by and you happen to step on it, that is mutter to do. I feel a bit scabby, even if your intention really is to kill it, but as long as you don't make it look like you're doing it, it's one of these funny few instances where we know what you're thinking and we're okay with what you're thinking. But optically, it's not something that should be done on Shabbos. So don't do it in a way that looks aggressive, that looks like you're trying to kill it. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Now, the question I want to raise is the middle category. So the middle category over here talks about different animals that are not inherently dangerous, but if they're pursuing you, you're allowed to kill them. So let me ask you a question. If the animal is not lethal, then why am I allowed to kill it, even if it's chasing me? So I'll incapacitate it. Why am I allowed to kill it if it's not going to kill me? I would think I could only kill a dangerous animal if it presents an actual danger. But if it's, I'm not at a risk of dying from this animal, why am I allowed to kill it? Which is biblically prohibited on Shabbos. Or I may have thought it's biblically prohibited to kill such an animal on Shabbos. But it's actually contingent on machlokis, on a debate between Rambam and pretty much everyone else. The Rambam, so there's something called a malacha shena tzricha legufa. Amalat Hashem Nitzricha LeGufa is as follows. There's a prohibition on Shabbos to dig. So what is the prohibition? The prohibition is creating a hole in the ground. Now, let's say I couldn't care less if there's a hole in the ground. I just, for whatever reason, I want to, I want to create a sandcastle, right? So I don't want to create a hole in the sand over there. I just want the sand in order to use it to make a sandcastle. So then I'm not actually, I am functionally, objectively creating a hole that is problematic, but I'm not doing it for the purpose of creating a hole. I'm doing it for another purpose. I just happen to create a hole along the way. That's called malacha sheina tzricha legufa. I did the malacha. I violated a prohibited action on Shabbos, but not for the reason of the malacha itself. So over here, when we kill an animal on Shabbos to protect ourselves, that's a malacha sheina tzricha legufa, because when they killed animals for the creation of the tabernacle, for the creation of the Mishkan, why did they do that? Not for the sake of hunting itself, because they used their skins. They used the leather to make the materials inside of the tabernacle, inside of the Mishkan. So that's called a malacha sheina tzricha legufa. When we kill animals, it's not similar directly, it's not completely analogous to the reason they killed animals when creating the Mishkan, which is the paradigm for the 39 malachos on Shabbos. So Rambam says, we don't care what your intentions are. We don't care what you're thinking. You're chai. That's still biblically prohibited. If you dig that hole, but you dig that hole with different intention, we don't care. You still dug a hole. You're still chai in the end of the day. So if I kill an animal on Shabbos, even if it's not for its skin, but to protect myself, that still is problematic according to the Rambam. Therefore, he says, even in this middle category, can you see me highlighting over here? Yeah. So even in this middle category of animals that are not dangerous, that they don't kill, Shainam Amisen, we have to read in for the Rambam, they likely won't kill you, but there's a chance they'll kill you. There's a chashash sakanta. So that's why Rambam says if they chase after you, you're allowed to preemptively kill, you're allowed to kill them in self-defense before they kill you. However, the Mishnah Berurah points out
carrying seizes.
What was that? What was that, Susan?
What about carrying diseases?
Oh, we'll get there soon.
Carrying diseases.
It's a good question. Okay. We're gonna get there in just a moment, actually. So that's a good point. So we're assuming just inherently if an animal is dangerous or not. We'll talk about, you know, an animal might not be intrinsic, like a mosquito, for instance. Mosquitoes are not intrinsically dangerous to human beings. But they can carry the Nile virus. They can carry malaria.
Yes.
Excellent. So you point out what Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach points out in Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa. He's quoted saying that if you live in an area where there are mosquitoes that are known to carry a disease, then the mosquitoes are not just a nuisance, but they are a danger. And then they would fall into the category here, and you'd be allowed to kill them on Shabbos. Very good. So your point is what Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says. And let me just finish the thought from what we said before. Most, we assume in normative halacha that a malacha sheina tzricha legufa is only prohibited rabbinically, is only dirabbanan. Meaning, when I kill an animal on Shabbos, not for its skin, but to protect myself, at most, all I'm violating is a rabbinical prohibition. Because I'm not killing the animal for the sake of its skin. I'm killing it to just eliminate it. Therefore, we could plug in a general principle in Hilchos Shabbos. There's something called a chula she'ein bo sakana, which means that, let's say someone's a chula she'ein bo sakana, someone is sick, they're in danger of dying, it supersedes. We could violate a biblical level prohibition. So if someone's in danger, we get in the car, we drive them to the hospital. I, driving a car that's havara, that's lighting a fire with the ignition, right, the gasoline, doesn't matter. To save someone's life, we violate Shabbos. But what if someone's not in danger, but they are achula she'im bo sakana. They're very sick. They might even be bedridden, but they're not going to die. They're just in extreme pain. Well, for someone who's in pain, what we can violate is not a biblical level prohibition, but it does supersede a rabbinical level prohibition. So in general, the way the halachic arithmetic works out is that if you have, like, you know, I don't know what you call it, the caret sign that we all learned in fourth grade, the greater less than sign. So you would basically put pain as the greater than and a rabbinical prohibition as the less than. The rabbis permitted, the rabbis basically, they instituted rabbinical prohibitions because they're called rabbinical prohibitions because the rabbis instituted them. So the rabbis giveth, the rabbis taketh. Same way the rabbis institute rabbinical prohibitions, they were able to say, but built into that, there's a dispensation for when someone is in tsar, when someone is in significant pain. So the animal or the bug doesn't need to actually have a possibility of causing death, of causing lethal results, even if it causes pain and has a tough sting, right? Like that murder hornet. Even if it's not going to kill you, even if you're not allergic to it, but if it could cause pain, you are allowed to kill it if it looks like it is interested in attacking you. So that is important to know, because killing a bug is only a rabbinical level prohibition because you're not doing it for the purpose of its skins. Therefore, in case of protecting yourself from pain, you are allowed to kill the bug before it attacks you if it looks like it wants to attack you. So let me just make a connect. Let me just make a distinction. There's a difference between bees and wasps. As you can tell, I've been watching a lot of these murder hornet YouTube videos. I learned a little bit about wasps and how they're different than bees. Bees, my understanding is generally they attack you if they feel threatened. So if a bee is not attacking you, it's not, doesn't look like it's trying to sting you, you're not allowed to kill it. But a wasp, wasps are generally predatory. They're generally aggressive by nature. So if there are wasps flying around your sukkah heading toward you, I think it's fair to assume that they might even be interested in stinging you if you get in their way. So a bug like that, I think, falls into the second category here. It causes extreme pain, doesn't kill you, but causes extreme pain. So if it looks like it wants to pursue you, then you are allowed to kill it. And I think it's fair game that a wasp that is flying nearby you, you may be able to assume that it might even come to sting you because they are aggressive by nature. Now, practically, I don't know if it's the wisest thing to pick a fight with a bunch of wasps in your sukkah. I would not advise that, really. In fact, I would probably leave the sukkah at that point and call an exterminator during Chol Moed right now. But if somehow you feel safe enough and you know that you have the shot 100%, you could go for it. I'm not going to encourage you picking a fight with a wasp, but halakhically, if you know you could kill it and you're not going to put yourself in danger, you can do it on Yontif itself. So that's an important halakha that comes out from these sources. Let me just pause very briefly if there are any clarifying questions that we have at this point.
Well, one would be is even if something may not be dangerous, you may think it's not dangerous to you, people may have a reaction that could be very dangerous, and you don't know who may be having the reaction, who would be susceptible to that.
Ah, okay, good. So, right, over my shear on at the end of Yontif, I think Harvey Berman brought up a very similar idea, which is, you know, many of us, we never got stung by a bee before, so we don't know if we would be allergic to it per se, right?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Right, so that's a good question. I guess you would have to basically look at the statistics. I haven't looked that up. I have to do a little more research. You know, if it's like, less than 1% of every person is allergic to bees, then I don't know if that's statistically significant enough that it should warrant treating everyone as possibly being allergic. But, you know, if we're saying like around 10% of human beings will have an allergic, a severe allergic reaction to bees stinging them, then I think, you know, yes, then we might be able to bump up the bee to a higher category of danger, if that's true. Does anyone know the statistics on it? Anyone want to enlighten us to the Metsius? Okay. No, so at some point, someone will Google it for us. Someone will let us know, or we'll find out after this year, and we'll apply that principle then. But that's a good point. And that comes back to the idea of mosquitoes also. But Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, I didn't put on the sheep, but in Shmir Shas Kehilsa, he's close saying, if you live in an area where mosquitoes carry West Nile, malaria, something similar, you assume that the mosquitoes are dangerous and they can be killed to protect yourself. So it's the same idea over there. One other halakha in Shulchan Aruch I want to bring to our attention is over here in source number 4. So let's say, you know, we're not talking about bees. We're not talking about wasps for sure. We're not talking about snakes. What about just a what about a flea? A paro shenikra bar explosh and arav usur letsodo. So remember, you're allowed to kill in very limited instances. But what about trapping? Trapping was another option, another weapon in our arsenal for dealing with bugs. And halakhically, we consider trapping be less problematic than killing the bug. So if there's a flea, you're not allowed to trap fleas unless it's on your flesh and it's going to sting you. However, you're never allowed to kill them. So when it comes to a flea, it's more of a nuisance. But if it's going to sting you, you're not allowed to kill it. But what you could do is you're allowed to trap it. However, here's something interesting. When it comes to lice, you're allowed to straight up kill lice on Shabbos, he says. Now, the question I would ask is, what do you mean? Lice, okay, great. They get in your hair. Again, a huge nuisance, but they generally inherently don't present any danger. So why, can anyone tell me, why would it be mutter, why would it be permissible to kill lice on Shabbos if they are not analogous to something like a snake, a scorpion, or a wasp? Why would the rabbis be okay and just give us a full heter to kill lice on Shabbos when they said you're not even allowed to trap a flea in certain instances? What's the difference between a flea and lice? Anyone know?
Well, the lice are on you and making you awfully uncomfortable, I would guess.
Right. So, I mean, it does happen. The Ramah talks about how they get stuck in your head. If they're on your head, you can kill them.
They're also contagious.
Right. So you're saying that they could carry some sort.
I think because it's kind of different lies according to like rabbinical, I don't know, very long time ago, it was considered as not the like animals or something. It is like self-born or something like this. I don't know how exact. I know the description in Russian, but it is something that it is can. Just appear without. So it is not because they reproduce.
Very good, Marina. So that's exactly what I was looking for. So what Marina is talking about is that the rabbis back in the times of the Talmud, based on the modern science of their day, they believe that lice spontaneously generated, which means they didn't believe that they sexually reproduced. And remember, since prohibitions on Shabbos, what's the paradigm? They're modeled after prohibitions that were used, malachos, actions that were used to build the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Mishkan. So what kind of animals did they kill? They killed creatures that sexually reproduced. La fuke, this is what you're talking about, Marina. It's here in the Mishnah Berurah. La fuke kina, to the exclusion of lice, to ena ba mizakhar v'nekeva, it's not produced by male and female. Ela ba min hazea, rather, what's it come from? They believe it came from the dirty residue. They believe it came from sweat. Lo chashiva birya, therefore it's not considered to be a living being for halakhic purposes. So you're not allowed to kill a being that's produced by a male and female, that's sexually produced, but something that spontaneously generates and just gets produced from the sweat, that gets produced from the residue, that would not be prohibited to kill on Shabbos. So what's interesting is that if you, generally we assume if someone likes to update halachic decisions based on scientific discoveries, usually that's used to go lakula, to be lenient. This is a good instance of where if you want to be very more modern and up to date, it actually requires you to be more stringent halachically. Because if you believe that now the rabbis knew what they were talking about, they just had the wrong data. But assuming that they're given the data we have today, which is that lice do not spontaneously generate out of nowhere, they would say it's usur, it's prohibited to kill them on Shabbos. So if you were of the opinion that we're supposed to update Chazal to fit modern science, then that means you shouldn't be killing lice on Shabbos. So this is just like an interesting instance. We assume, you know, the more modern and progressive you are, it means like the more lenient you are. But you know what? Sometimes if you want to be consistent, that means that you also have to take the stringencies along in the package as well. Not to say like, you know, I don't think many people who are more progressive with their halacha are going to listen and say, oh man, I really loved killing lice on Shabbos. Now I can't do that. But anyway, be it as it may, that is how the halacha would come out. One other thing I want to bring up is a distinction between physical pain versus psychological pain. Until this point, we've been talking about stinging, we've been talking about biting, we've been talking about scratching and clawing, whatever animals and bugs tend to do. But what if they're not causing me physical pain, but they're causing me psychological pain? For instance, let's say I am trying to sleep in the sukkah, or I'm trying to sleep in my room on a typical Shabbos or Yom Tov, and there is a fly or a mosquito that just keeps buzzing right near my ear that would not let me fall asleep. I remember when I went with my, back when I was in Shalvim in my 2 years in Eretz Yisrael, they brought us to this yeshuv that they're basically, they used to be in Gaza before the, I forgot what the politically correct term for it is, displacement, whatever you call it. And then they got put into they were in a yeshuv, a settlement, way down south in the Negev. So we were brought there to for Shabbos to learn about what it's like to live there. And honestly, I don't remember any of the talks. All I remember is that I've never been attacked by so many flies in my life. No matter what room in any building you were in that yeshuv, there were flies everywhere. I am puzzled today as to how that exists. It was terrible. So all I remember is just even when I tried getting a Shabbos afternoon nap, the flies were relentless. They were remorseless. They attacked us. So the question is, if you're trying to sleep and the fly keeps landing on you, the fly is buzzing near your ear, are you allowed to kill them or trap them? So Shlomo Zalman says, no, only when it comes to physical pain do we have such a dispensation. But Rav Nissim Karelitz says, She'ein chiluk bein tzar ha-nefesh le'tzar ha-guf. There is no distinction in halacha when it comes to tzar ha-nefesh or tzar ha-guf. The same way there's a dispensation for physical pain, there's also the same dispensation applies to psychological pain as well. Good. You could grab that animal, that bug that's disturbing you, and you could chuck it out of the room. That's something that you could do. You wouldn't be able to kill it because it's not a danger, but at least you'd be able to grab it, throw it out. You could trap it and get rid of it that way. That's what Ramissa Karelet says. So I think it's just a good source to know in general, because as the world becomes more sensitive and aware of mental health, you see also that we have sources in halacha that recognize psychological pain, and I think those sources come more to the forefront as society is more understanding of psychological health, mental health. You'll see in modern halakhic literature that rabbis also are bringing in halakhic sources that discuss mental health into the discussion too. One last source I will share, and then I will conclude and just take any remaining outstanding questions. And PLL,
I have a question.
So let me just, if I can just finish this source, Phil. It's now
yes. Questions. Yes.
So the final source I want to share is we've talked until now about killing bugs. We talked about throwing them out. We've been talking about trapping bugs. There is another option in our arsenal, which is using chemical sprays. Now, chemical sprays, there are two main varieties. There are sprays like Raid, which are used to kill the bug. And then there are bug repellents, which are just you spray off on yourself to keep the bug away. You are not allowed to spray in order to kill a bug. If there are mosquitoes or other kinds of bugs, you can use a repellent to keep them away from your body, to keep them away from your sukkah. However, you cannot spray it on them themselves. Also, this isn't the same halacha, but it reminds me of when a Jewish army attacks another nation, they have to leave an open route for that nation to retreat. You have to give them, Rambam says, you have to give them the option to escape from the battle, not to corner them in one place. So almost like in a similar way, you have to leave a window open in order so that the bugs can escape. If you're going to use something like Raid, something that if they breathe in enough, they'll die. Because otherwise, if you corner the bugs and you just put the poison around them, you essentially are doing everything up to the point of killing them. So that you would not be allowed to do. However, if you want to spray it on your own body and rub it in, that's okay. But it has to be, it can't be something that is like a thick ointment that you would put on. So for instance, when it comes to sunscreen, there's the thicker creams that you put on, and then there's the more misty spray. The creams are problematic on Shabbos because of mimareach. Same way you don't use a bar of soap on Shabbos. Same way, ideally, we're supposed to actually water down the liquid soap if it's a thicker consistency. That way you're not smoothing it over and rubbing it into your skin. So when it comes to bug repellent as well, most bug repellent, in my experience, is similar to the misty spray, the aerosol that you use for sunscreen too. So it shouldn't be a problem. But important to know, if you have something that's of a thicker consistency, that would be problematic to rub in on Shabbos. So that's not a halacha in bugs per se. That's just a halacha in using, applying different ointments to our bodies on Shabbos. Anyway, let me pause here. This is essentially, and actually let me just quickly summarize, all right? Because there's a lot flying around here. Okay, there's my pun. A lot flying around here. We said if an animal is dangerous, it can kill. It's lethal. You can preemptively kill it if it's nearby. If it's going to cause extreme pain, like a wasp, let's say, and it looks like it's going to chase after you, you can kill it as well. Then we talked about bugs, which they could present some kind of pain. Either they could sting you and cause some degree of pain, nothing intense, but discomfort for sure, or even psychological pain, like Renis and Karelit says. So in those cases, we are not allowed to kill them, but we either trap them or we can pick them up and we can like flick them off and throw them out of the window if we want to. And then the third option, and this applies for any kind of bug, doesn't matter what it is, you're not allowed to spray to kill it unless it's dangerous or cause extreme pain, but you could always use repellent on your body or in the general vicinity to keep the bugs away. That's basically the options that we have. But again, if you're in your sukkah and the bugs are swarming you and none of these seem like a viable option, unfortunately at that point, it actually would be mutter, be permissible to leave the sukkah and go back inside our houses. Okay. I'll pause here for any questions. I think Phyllis had one.
Yes, I have a question. So I'm listening to all the detail about how and what and how not to to go overboard in trying to make yourself more comfortable to sit in a sukkah or when you can get out of the sukkah. The sukkah being only a temporary dwelling. And it's amazing to me how many rules there are. And then I think back about the rule for Shabbos, that if God forbid the glass that's holding your Shabbos candle explodes, and just to make it shorter, and your house is on fire, that you can't put out the fire, and you have to run out of the house that is your temporary dwelling, holds all of your precious and expensive things and memories, and you have to leave the house and with nothing, and that's not a way more extreme tsa'ar than the problem you have in the sukkah, and somehow it just doesn't sit right with me.
Right. So I think we have to go back to those Mishnayos and understand halacha l'maisa, how they pan out. So right, you're referring to the Mishnayos and Shabbos, which actually are in that series of Mishnayos that I took and put on the source sheet there in source one. So we're talking about a biblical prohibition there of putting out a fire. So a biblical prohibition cannot be superseded by mere tsar, but a rabbinical prohibition can. So that's actually why, you know, you can even invite non-Jews to help out. There's ways around that. But I agree with you that it seems very extreme. If you just read the Mishnayos without the commentary, it definitely sounds like you're supposed to let your whole house burn down before putting out a fire on Shabbos. But,
well, I know there are things you can do, but they may not help. You know, like you can pour water around the fire but you can't pour the water directly on the fire, but around it. But, you know, let's just say, your house just explodes. It takes, the fire is all over the place, and there's just nothing you can do about it but run out. But it's such extreme tsar, balei chayim, whatever you want to call it. I just can't put my finger on, even, it doesn't, you might say that it's a Torah prohibition, but I don't exactly see it as a Torah prohibition. I mean, the rabbis explained that's a Torah prohibition, but I don't see that. I know you can't create a fire, but I don't know where it says that you can't put it out if your whole house is in danger. Your future is in danger.
You're bringing up a good point. It's well taken. You know what? Maybe we'll prepare that for a future class, and we'll see if we can find some commentaries on it that address that difficulty they're bringing up.
I mean, I mean, bugs in the sukkah don't compare with the
houses. Bugs are nothing compared.
Your house is going to burn down.
Absolutely.
Okay, please forgive me for that.
Thank you for sharing. That's important. When I read those Mishnahs, I had a similar feeling. I'll take one more question before we conclude. Anyone else have? Okay.
Can you use netting? Can you use netting in your sukkah to prevent insects from coming into it?
If you meaning like you just have netting around your sukkah and it keeps them from flying in,
or on the roof, under the sach.
Then there's like a question of the way it's designed and if it impedes the schach itself. But as far as killing the bugs, not killing the bugs, keeping the bugs out, just in terms of those halachos, that would be okay. It's no different than having a screen right next to your window to keep the bugs out when you open your window in your house. Okay, great. Yasher Koach, thank you all for joining. I hope you all had a great sukkah, a good moed to all, and
thank you.
Enjoy the last days.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, have a wonderful evening.
Have a good night, everybody.
Oh, and by the way, if anyone wants, I actually have a sheet where I summarize all the halachos. So if anyone wants that sheet, because maybe this was like a little unclear, I wanted to go between both, but I couldn't do it because screen share
isn't working properly.
So I have a summary sheet of everything we talked about. You can email me. I'm going to put it in the chat. Oh. And anyone who emails me, I'm more than happy to share the sheet with. Okay.
Thank you.
There it is. It's in the chat, rabbikurtz@cas-stanford.org. All right. Have a great night, everyone. Thank you.